Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly, Step Brothers, Boats and Hoes. What's it got to do with today's show? Absolutely nothing, because we're talking stepsisters next.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
I guess you're just what I need.
No one's going to sing it?
Oh, negative, it's too high.
Oh, I can do Rico Cassick.
Here we go. And here
goes. I guess you just what I needed.
Just what I needed.
Yeah.
Hey guys, welcome to Netflix News. We're talking stepsisters today. I'm Rick Hong. You can find me on all social media at Rick Hong, R-I-C-K-H-O-N-G. And I'm joined by Ashley Chaney.
Hi, you guys. It's so good to be sitting back next to Ricky. It's been a long time. What's up, everybody? It is, in fact, Ashley Chaney. If you want to talk to me online, find me at Ashley on Camera. And let's talk about all things Netflix, y'all. Let's do it.
And I'm Steve Kaufman. You can find me on Twitter almost exclusively at Steve Kaufman. That is K-A-U-F-M-A-N-M.
And I'm so excited to be back. I missed you guys last week, so I decided to come back. And I'm Amy Cassandra Martinez. You can find me on all social media at Amy Cassandra MTZ.
So this is a 3-week streak with the same handle?
It's happening.
It's happening.
Consistency is beautiful.
Hey guys, and we're also joined by a special treat. We're joined by the writer-producer of Stepsisters, Chuck Hayward.
Hello. Woo-hoo! Hey, everybody.
Yeah. Chuck, where can everybody find you?
On the social medias, I'm on Instagram at @ZeroChucks and Twitter at @ChuckOff.
Chuck off.
Yes!
Thank you, dude. I'm surprised you were able to get that one.
I know. I was surprised too. I was looking for, what was I looking for? Chuck My Life, but somebody had that already. Yeah. That was going to be my one for both of them, but it was already taken. So I was like, there's some other creative Chuck out there who was a little quicker on his trigger finger. So.
Do you know that I just got the Zero Chucks right now?
Oh, yeah. It's all like, profanity with my name plugged in. Yeah.
I want to change my handle.
Oh, no.
Dude, she's changed her handle so many times, I can't even keep track.
You can't
anymore.
Keep up. How do we follow you?
Also,
you
know, Chuck My Life has not tweeted since 2010.
What?
Okay. Pointing that out. You can get
I'm going to buy it from that guy.
No, you know what? I don't even think you need to buy it because, like, on Twitter, now that you're Chuck Hayward, you could probably be Chuck Hayward and, like, they'll give you the blue check thing. Yeah,
yeah.
They'll kick off anybody else that tries to be you.
I think he's been Chuck Hayward his whole life.
Most of it, for sure.
Yeah, but the only real Chuck Hayward, you know. Unless you like Chuck Off, which I do like.
Yeah, that's more me. That's more my style. Yeah.
But then on Instagram, somebody has Chuck Off?
Somebody had Chuck Off on Instagram, so I had to change it to Zero Chucks, which I actually like better. And I was like, oh, I should go back and change my since I have, like, you know, I've tweeted maybe 5 times, 10 times.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I should just go back and redo it so that they match. So this gives me an idea for tonight.
There you go.
Well, very cool.
I'll get on that when I get home.
All right, guys.
I tweeted into it so you know exactly who they are.
Okay.
Get you right on there.
Great. Thank you.
All right, guys. So we are talking stepsisters today. Last week, we showed you the trailer. This week, we got Chuck. We're going to talk all sorts of things about stepsisters. Mm-hmm. Saw it. Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Cassandra Martinez watched it.
I think Steve saw it.
Yeah,
the whole panel watched it.
Hope you're getting some, like, you know, back end numbers for all these.
Yes, I know. I love it. We get mad clicks. We get mad streams. I love it. Yeah.
No, and if you guys are watching live, please jump into the chat, ask questions. We'll try to get that question to Chuck. Otherwise, you know, throw it into the comments and we'll try to get some answers for you on that end of it. But dude, the whole Netflix thing, you started with Dear White People?
Yes. So I worked on Dear White People for both seasons, and it's like the best TV job I've ever had. It's one of the most amazing shows. I'm surrounded by unbelievably intelligent, hilarious people. We get to talk about real issues and stuff that's affecting people's lives, and we get to add comedy into it, and so I think that's always makes it an easier pill to swallow. And it's just fun. Like, you just go to work and laugh all day and get to, you know, feel like you're addressing topics that may not get addressed normally on mainstream TV. So.
Wait. We got to back up, though, Rick. You just jumped in. This whole Netflix thing. What do you mean, this whole Netflix thing? Is Netflix the first place you've ever written for? How did your career as a writer take off?
Netflix.
Let's take him to dinner first.
Yeah, seriously, right? Yeah, come on, dude. Buy me a drink. That was my fifth show that I worked on. Every other show that I had worked on got canceled after one season.
Fifth
time's the charm. They say that all the time.
Yeah.
And so, like, I was hoping that this one would be the one to break the curse, and it was. And the shows I've worked on before were on Bent on NBC, Wendell and Vinny on Nick at Night, One Big Happy on NBC, and then Cooper Barrett's Guide to Surviving Life on Fox. And they were all great shows, wonderful experiences, but they just didn't for some reason, go the distance. So, and this one seems to. We just wrapped season 2 in December of Dear White People.
Congratulations.
And thank you very much. Yeah, and I got my hooks into Netflix, and I was like, I'm riding this baby till the wheels fall off. I was like, these guys are too amazing to work with. Like, I need to make sure I do everything with them.
So for you guys that don't know at home, sometimes when you're a writer, you get guaranteed a certain amount of episodes per season. Season 1, how many episodes are yours?
I had one by myself and then 2 that I shared with another staff writer, not staff writer, but another writer on the staff named Jack Moore. And then this season I had one by myself and shared another one with Jack Moore. So
that's great. And then Dear White People is how many episodes?
10 episodes each season.
10 episodes,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And so for a 10-episode show, how many writers are we talking? How many writers are in the room?
7 writers.
Seven writers plus
a script coordinator and a writer's assistant who, you know, they're doing a lot of the hard legwork of making sure that they get everything
notes
down. That
every
we
day? Say, are you kidding
dude,
me?
That
as
shit
someone
is...
who's been a writer's assistant.
Oh, can I
yeah, that's
okay.
fine.
Yeah.
So don't worry.
I just did, right? We have to go back and edit that out. They contribute too as far as like ideas and pitches and you know, jokes and all that stuff. So it's 7 people technically, but it's really 9.
It's a whole room, yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole room. We take good ideas from everybody. So we like to make everyone feel very empowered, you know, regardless of your ranking or whatever it is. So
it's a nice way of saying we will steal from you.
We will steal
your
yes,
shit.
Yes, we will steal all your shit. So do not say anything that you don't really want us to take.
It's mine now.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's a negative way. The positive way
is
everyone
gets
to say...
It's a collaborative, open environment.
Everyone gets to say something.
There you go.
But it's also good. We're not an authoritarian room.
No.
Where the people who aren't writers don't feel like they're allowed to say anything at all.
And there are rooms, too, where even staff writers, which is like the entry-level writing credit, like... they don't even feel comfortable speaking, where it's like you've been in the rooms before, so you see it's cutthroat. Sometimes if the, you know, if the senior writers are like, you know, the producers, executive producers and everything, if they're not amenable to hearing from everybody, then it's like, hey, shut the fuck up and let the grown-ups talk. And that's not a good way to...
It's so unhealthy.
It's unhealthy. I feel like it doesn't foster an open communication.
It doesn't work for comedy, for sure. I'll guarantee you.
Especially when, you know, the more experienced writers tend to be a little bit older. So, like, having younger voices, I feel like, makes everything feel
keeps it current,
keeps it fresh. And they're, you know, they have an opportunity to learn from the younger writers as much as the younger writers can learn from them. So I think it's... I've been lucky to work for showrunners who all welcome your experience. Because basically they're like, we're paying you to be here, you better contribute. So like, I think that's the more logical way to go about it. And I'm lucky to have always had that. So
how is working from networks to working with Netflix?
Night and day.
Networks are very structured because they're bound to advertisers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas Netflix is like subscribers and then it's... You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if it's Wild Wild West in terms of, like, that's why I wanted to know how you like that experience.
It's Wild Wild West in all the good ways. Like, the Netflix executives, a lot of them came from TV and other, you know, from network television or cable television or whatever. So they have the same structural ideas, but they give you a lot more freedom. So it's kind of like, we don't get 100 notes on every episode that's like, oh, try do this. This is not going to work. This is going to offend people, blah, blah, blah. All their notes are like, we're not getting enough from this character, or we're getting too much from this character.
Those are the
like,
best notes.
They're the best notes.
Juicy kind. Yeah,
exactly, the juicy kind.
Move the
story forward. Mm-hmm. Maybe make this scene a little funnier. Like they don't give anything that makes us be like, ah, damn it. Like now we have to go and sort of change the tenor of what we were trying to say, or change the message, or anything like that. Like they want us to do us. And they're just like, here's how we can make what you guys are trying to do as like the best it can possibly be. So I couldn't ask for better collaborators from them and Lionsgate, who's our studio. Mm-hmm. They're the same way. They don't get in our way. They, you know, like I said, and then when they do give notes, 9 times out of 10, they're super thoughtful and they actually make us make the show better. So
that's great.
We are very lucky.
That's an uncommon narrative. You hear. Like when you get people in here, it's normally like they're dancing around the... Yeah, sometimes they
go to the bullshit register. They're like,
sometimes dealing with the network is a challenge.
Yeah, no,
it's a welcome challenge. I'm on their network. Jay Becker in the chat, how does the room work? Do you go off and write on your own? and put it up on the screen, or do you, or is it a collaborative, everyone all in all the time process?
This would be great for you to talk about the process.
Yeah, actually. For sure. It's actually both. So we sit around the table like this. Mm-hmm. We all throw out. We talk about our personal lives, what we've read in the news, and all that kind of stuff. And it seems like it's just kind of bullshitting and getting ramped up. But story comes from that, and it feels so that when people say like, "Oh, I really connected to that show," it's because it's like these are things that have happened to us or happened to our friends and family, and so we're just sharing those kind of experiences. And people, it's easy to connect to that when it has that authenticity. We'll all come up with an idea together. We'll say, hey, episode one, like, we want to do this, we want to say that, oh, this character should do this, and then we'll have it up on a board where, you know, we kind of beat out bullet points for the entire episode.
Beat out, everybody, to interject here.
Oh,
beat out.
sorry.
Let's talk about what beat out means. Go, take it away.
Yeah, beat out is like organizing and outlining the story.
The story plot points in a
bullet point sort of way.
It's like doing an outline.
Yeah, basically. It's pre-writing. So whatever, you know, whether you're writing in a group or on your own, this is what you're going to be doing. There's just more voices. So then we'll say, hey, Rick, this is your episode. So you take the bullet points that are on the board. You go off on your own and write an outline. Outline comes back to the group. We read it. We, you know, add our little tweaks and maybe add a joke here. Maybe this storyline isn't clear enough in the outline. So maybe clarify that a little bit more. And then we send the outline to the studio, Netflix, or to the studio Lionsgate, and then to the network, which is Netflix, and then they give us the thumbs up, hopefully, and then then it's like, all right, Rick, you're approved, you're off to script, so you go off and you write.
And that's when you get paid.
That's when you get that money. Yeah,
you get the script, you get paid.
What's the schedule like for that? Like, how long do you have from writer's room to first draft?
Usually they give you like 5 days or so, which if you don't have
fast.
It's fast, but like a lot of times they'll say like you don't have to come into work, so like
while you're doing that,
that's 5 days of being on your own, going through your own process, and you know
and do you wait until day four to write?
No, I wait until day four to finish. I don't wait until day four to start, because like I like to really go in there and do as much as possible early on, walk away from it for a day so I can like, you know,
studious, right?
Yeah, so I can like get my bearings, get some distance from it, and then I go back in and you know, do everything else. Sometimes I'll slip it to one of my coworkers to check it out before I turn it in, and then I turn it in, and
Yours is such like a stress-free process. Everybody else is like, I wait till the last day. I'm sweating. I hate myself. I cry, and then I try.
Yeah, no, I can't do that. I'm too neurotic for that. I need to know that like halfway, you know, between now and the due date, that I have like 3/4 of the way done, or else I will go completely batshit crazy. And so then, trying to avoid that these days.
Wait. So was this your inside track to Stepsisters, or did Fat Camp have to come out? So Chuck also did a movie called Fat Camp. That was on what?
It was an independent film, so it was on. It's available on like on demand, so iTunes, Google Play, Amazon, all that stuff.
Still available for those people that might want to buy it.
Yes, absolutely. Get check it out. It's laughter. It's like Heavyweights, that movie from
But like I love that movie.
The dirty version, the R-rated version.
Yeah, right?
Because my thing was like when I was a teenager and I went to camp, we didn't talk like Disney characters. We talked like dropping F bombs.
13-year-old
boys. 13-year-old boys, exactly. So we wanted to make that as real as possible, and the director Jen Arnold, like, she was amazing, and she kind of like it's so amazing when they give a female director movie with almost all male characters, and she knocked it out of the park. She got the humor, she got the bro-iness.
It's so rare to
it's
have women
super
in comedy.
Duper rare.
And then is she white?
She's white. Yeah,
she's white. Okay.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter. She's a woman, which is great. So
yeah.
I'm just curious. Exactly. I'm just curious to like kind of get the demographics.
What just happened?
Yes. And she's a lesbian, so we checked a lot of boxes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there we go. No, I was going to say, if she was Asian, I was like, oh, it's even better, but whatever.
No, I'm
just kidding.
Your day will come, Rick. Don't worry.
Exactly. I'm going to be like the Wachowskis, and all of a sudden it's like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did Stepsisters get made?
So Stepsisters, I was looking around online, futzing around, like procrastinating, and I saw a video of this white sorority called Alpha. Wait.
A real live YouTube video?
Yeah, YouTube video, yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Zeta Tau Alpha was the name of them. They did this, like, regional step show, and they won. And they won, like, Ludacris was, like, hosting, and he gave them, like, a $100,000 check.
I was so intrigued
by it because the reactions of everyone in the room was so different. So during the show, everybody in the audience, which is almost entirely black, were like, yeah! Like, on their feet, screaming, going nuts. Like, they really, you know, enjoyed the show because the girls did an amazing job.
Yeah.
And then when they showed the when they showed the awarding of the check, some of the girls on stage who were competing against them, who were all black sororities, were not so happy. When they announced it, one of the sororities like just turned and like walked off the stage. So I was like, oh, that's interesting that there were that. People loved it so much, but people hated it so much. And I thought that was a really interesting way.
Natural tension.
Natural tension, mm-hmm. and a really good way to get into the story about like when people are doing things that they are not culturally used to doing, and when people kind of venture out and try things that are new to them and that are embraced and emblematic of a different type of person, a mm-hmm. different race of people. I find that so intriguing whenever I see it. And so I thought that'd be a really great opportunity for a movie. And when the trailer came out, people were like, oh, this is such a ripoff of like Pitch Perfect. And I was like, how dare you? This is a ripoff of Bring It On. Like, this is like, let's come on, man. Know your history.
Jesus, dude, that's hilarious.
Yeah, like, and so in that, because like Bring It On, I absolutely love
yep,
that movie.
Amy and I had this conversation.
Oh, you're a big,
too,
you guys yeah. big Bring It On fan?
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
like Clovers and
Clovers.
Yeah, I know almost
like,
every
line.
Because
at the end of that, they have that whole sequence. And it's like my song, you know. It's like, oh, Ricky, you're so fine.
Ricky, you're so fine. Sorry.
Oh my god.
Yeah. keep going.
No. That was like I always wanted to write a movie like that, and so I did that. And somebody was asking me too, like, why did you do sorority and not a fraternity? Because I'm a fraternity member too. Mm-hmm. I was an Alpha Phi Alpha. You know, I pledged at Syracuse, and they were like, well, why didn't you do frats? And I was like, well, because like when I saw the video, it was women.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the story that mm-hmm. instantly kind of connected in my brain. And then we did a bunch of table reads. So Lena Waithe, who's the Emmy Award-winning
yep,
writer.
It's actually cool you say that, because Amy and I got to go to the Shy red carpet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
oh, nice.
Yeah. So yeah. she let me interview Lena, and then she interviewed Common. So mm-hmm.
oh, so did you know Lena from before? Because I met her around the same time I met you, I think.
Not personally, but like yeah. I'm friends with her agents, and like
okay.
I have talked to her before.
Gotcha.
But no, like no, it'd be like you know this guy. She'd yeah. be like,
you guys aren't doing each other's hair on Friday nights and like talking about.
But she's
about
awesome though, man. She's awesome, yeah. And it's awesome that like she's a producer on this.
Yes,
too.
So she read the script because we've been friends for years, and she was like, look, I really like this. I want to help make this happen. So she started organizing these table reads, and so we would get a bunch of actors together, and they would all read it. And the feedback I was getting from the actresses there was like, we don't like women don't get these kinds of roles. Like they're mm-hmm, always like mm-hmm. the girlfriend or the yeah. hot chick who doesn't really have a whole lot of depth. And I was like, well, like I, you know, you've seen even lately in movies. Actually, you've seen from the beginning of comedy, like I Love Lucy and like mm-hmm. you know the Carol Burnett Show and everything like that, and Mary Tyler Moore. Like women have always been a big part of comedy and television and film. And yes. I was like, that sucks that the you know that people aren't getting these roles. So it made me like double down. It made me
and
really...
don't forget Maude, man.
The Golden Girls. Yeah, dude. B. Arthur's been cracking us up for, you know, decades. So I was excited to do that because, you know, these are all three-dimensional women. Yes, of course, there are some stereotypes, but then we break down the stereotypes.
You fixed that, though. Exactly. You did a really good job of, like, introducing certain issues and then fixing the problem.
It was more, you know, you get a lot of TV shows and movies where you're introduced to a character and they're kind of like a blank slate. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, okay, and then you learn to love them.
Mm-hmm.
But these people, you meet them and you kind of just don't like them. So you slowly peel back the layers and get to know who they really are.
Right.
Was that your goal all along?
That was 100% my goal because, like, everybody, I, you know, having been in a black or being in a black fraternity and, like, you know, seeing different white organizations in college, mm-hmm. it was like, there are a lot of similarities here that we don't necessarily highlight. We always tend to focus on our differences. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, like, everybody has the same sort of goal, like, you know, increase the profile of your organization, attract new members, represent yourselves in a way that makes you proud, community service, and all that stuff. So I think a lot of there were a lot of stereotypes from the black sororities to the white and vice versa.
Yeah, totally.
And so I wanted to, like, throw those out there and then watch as those get broken down, as they get to know them as more than just stereotypes and as actual people, like three-dimensional human beings. So.
No, dude, you had great actresses in this, too. So, like, how do you say the lead's last name? I can't say her last name. I'll butcher it.
Oh, Etchikinwoke.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
But, you know, but, like, I mean, I recognize Alessandra Torresani from, like, the Battlestar Galactica mm-hmm. prequel and, like, Linwood Smith. She's...
Lyndon,
she was in Andrea Savage's, like, True TV, like, I'm sorry, TV mm-hmm. show, like, I recognized her.
She actually was on Cooper Barrett's Guide to Surviving Life, too.
Parenthood. Oh, cool, yeah.
Parenthood, too, no?
Yeah. And then Eden Cher and Notori Naughton, who's amazing. And she'd never really done comedy before. She played Aisha, who was the main character's like best friend and sorority sister. She knocked it out of the park. Like,
she was great.
I thought she was so fucking funny.
And then the actor from Orange is the New Black as the boyfriend, as the first boyfriend.
Dude,
he was great.
I met him at the screening last week as Matt McGorry, and I was like, oh my god, dude! Like every line you said is exactly the way I heard it in my head when I was writing.
That's not
normal. That's not normally the case. And then Nia Gervais, who's also on Dear White People, and then Marquis Richardson, who's the eventual love interest, who's also on Dear White People. So, and they've been friends for years of mine and each other. So it was working with your friends at Dear White People and then going to work with your friends on Stepsisters was unbelievably cool. And I forgot to mention Ben Corey Jones too. He's the other producer. He and Lena together, like they spearheaded the table reads and they got it sold. I don't know how much of this I'm allowed to say, but like they got it sold to one company that went out of business and then another company that sort of didn't want to, I don't know, whatever.
Okay,
and so Netflix was basically our angels. Like they came in when the movie was already shot and edited, and they were like, we want to put this out there.
It's like so on point with all the content.
They came in as a distributor.
Yeah, they came in as a distributor. Yeah, okay, they were not involved in the development or anything.
That's what I was curious about to see, like how, since you were on Dear White People, to say, you know, I got this idea, but that's
great. No, yeah, those were two separate sort of things. I just happened to kind of be at Netflix, and I'm like, can you adopt me, Netflix? I want to be with you forever.
That's what we keep trying.
Yeah, get your own hustle.
We can go in as quintuplets. Like it'll be it's a package deal. Yeah,
Chuck, you can write me a part because you and I go way back,
and to like
three
or something. There's some dissension in the family, sibling rivalry.
Any chance I get, man, I just try to cut. See, like, look. No. I'm blocking Ashley now.
Right. The bus tires are all over their back, the tire tracks.
Did you write this by yourself or did you have partners?
No, I wrote it by myself.
By yourself. Yeah. Okay, very cool. Yeah. And how come you weren't on set for any of the shooting?
I was there for about a week. Okay. In TV and film are a little different. So in TV, the writer's on set all the time and the director, you know, is, you know, hey, we good? We got that? Film is a little bit different. It's a director's medium, so your input is not as welcomed, to be completely honest. I don't think anyone's going to be upset about that. But they were like, you know, you gave us the script. We worked on the script together for months and months and months. The directors on both movies got in a lot of their ideas in the writing process. So, you know, they felt like it was something they really made their own. And then they kind of don't need you after that. So I did enjoy the week in Atlanta with, you know, in a beautiful hotel. It was amazing.
You're like, I like my per diem.
Yeah. I mean, come on, man. They know how to treat you.
Atlanta's pretty fun.
I'm not a writer, but how do you like it when you finish something? You just talked about the actor, you know, like talking about how you nailed the performance exactly like I wrote it. How hard is it to let go of how you envision and then what you actually see?
I don't think it's always that hard because I feel like a lot of times they bring something to it that you didn't necessarily see. I've seen that a couple times in the movies. I didn't write it. They're saying the words that I said, but they're bringing to it attitudes and backstories and emotions that I hadn't necessarily layered in there.
Right, so that's the actor's work, right?
That's the actor's work. That's what makes one actor different from another actor. Like, is their take on that character, on the material that you give them? And a lot of times they find shit that's like better than what you put there, bring something to it. But I still get credit for it, so I'm like, rock on, keep working. Exactly. Still says my name at the end of the movie.
Or sometimes that's kind of there by osmosis that they find. You put it there, but you didn't actually intentionally put it there.
I've had that
experience a lot. Where you're like, that's
exactly what I meant.
That was also me.
Completely intentional. That's been a really fun thing to discover. So there are certain times where like, I don't think they understood that joke fully, and like, I don't think it landed because of that. But it's more often, I would have never thought to do it that way. Nice work.
Yeah. Right.
So there's one line in the movie that just was pure perfection. I want to know how you came about it. Racists can't own things. Mm-hmm. Was it that you saw the video on YouTube and you're like, okay, so yes, I'm going to focus on stepping, and then you kind of got to that point where it's, you know, I can really delve into that message? Or was it when you were writing, you're like, hey, I think I should say this, or how did that go about?
Yeah, well, it wasn't like, because that's the thing, like, that's kind of our main character's perspective, and that's her argument. I don't think it's necessarily the argument of the movie. I think it's the argument, like, I wasn't trying to say, like, hey, everyone believed this one thing. It was like, this is how these girls look at it, these are how these girls look at it, and these are how these guys look at it, and all that. So it was, I wanted to be very individual, but that's a really, like, and that's always been sort of my... my perspective was like, you know, races can't own things, but I understand that that's kind of a Pollyanna-ish way to look at it. Like, you have to sort of, you really have to go back and look at, like,
the history,
yeah, exactly, where it came from, what it means for the culture, how people prepare for it, what it's, like, it's not just a dance routine that you can learn. There's a lot of stuff that goes involved in it, that is involved in it. There's a lot of teamwork, there's a lot of all that stuff, and so I think... but yeah, while that was kind of the underlying message for that character, I think it was intended to start a conversation, not be the answer to a question.
Right, and it does start a conversation. Yeah. Like, as we're sitting here right now, I'm like, would I be upset if like a team of African dancers wanted to do some Irish river dance?
Yeah.
Dude, I would love to see that.
I would love to see that.
It would be amazing.
Yeah, that's my next. That'll be my next thing.
No, man, they recently announced a remake of The Greatest American Hero, and it's going to follow an Indian American woman. And there was, like, back in the day, there was this cheesy thing on YouTube where it has Indian Spider-Man and Superwoman or something, and they're doing the dancing and stuff, and I was just like, man, if they could make The Greatest American Hero like that,
they stole your idea?
No, I'm just saying, if they could, it'd be great. Okay. But they just announced that they're green lighting The Greatest American Hero, not a white guy, not a white woman, but an Indian American woman as The Greatest American Hero, which I think is a great idea for television.
Well, yeah, because I think it's in the title. It's an Indian American woman, Greatest American Hero. Like, the idea, when people say, like, oh, that guy has all American good looks, that usually means, like,
white
dude with, like, you know, blonde crew cut or something like that, or perfectly wavy hair or something like that.
Rick just very subtly pointed at me.
Yeah.
I just
want to
point that out, Rick.
I think we were all sort of looking,
Rick was kind of subtly looking.
Yeah.
Steve, the white guy. I wasn't even looking at you. I was looking at Chuck.
Your finger was just unintentionally.
It just automatically just bent towards Steve. Yeah.
Besides, Mom, I was talking to Dad, or whatever it is, and he can't buy me love, or whatever he says.
Oh, wait.
Shut up, Chuck.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That's a good pull, man. Deep pull there from the 80s.
No, but. So what's next? What are you? So you got Dear White People.
Yeah,
you've got this out of the way. What is it you're working on next?
So I wrote a script. T.I. the rapper had an idea for a movie about. He kind of wanted to do. Now he wanted to do an urban Pitch Perfect. Like, that's one that's more of a Pitch Perfect style thing. So we got Pepsi came on to sponsor the development of the script. They're at Sundance, like, promoting it and trying to find distributors. We have a great director, this guy Justin Francis, who's like a music video guy and young and hip and exciting.
I know just the place for this to go.
I'll talk to my corporate parents and just be like,
please take this next thing of mine. Yeah. Absolutely.
I think it would be dope. And T.I. is a producer on it, and he's going to star in it in a supporting role. Not like the roles. It's about basically like. Teenage girl singing groups in like underfunded like LAUSD schools and stuff like that. Like, music programs are being threatened because of budget cuts and all this stuff. And it's like how these girls have to kind of rise above. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of the same group dynamics, but if we focused more on the black sorority, it's that sort of way. And even though it's a comedy, like, it deals with a lot of really. Interesting social issues. I don't want to. I don't think I'm allowed to give too much away.
That's great.
But that script's all. I know. That script's all written and it's out of the way. And then we were out pitching a remake of Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Yes!
but with a black family.
Yes! The dishes are done.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Uh-huh. So we have an offer on that. We're negotiating right now. So hopefully that continues to go well, because that is one of the. Like, I've seen that movie. I went in there, I was like, I've never prepared less for a meeting than this, because, like, I know the dialogue, I know everything, in and out, back and forth.
So,
like,
who's going to play Christina Applegate's character? And if you had your pick of any
dream, man.
So I either think Yara Shahidi from Blackish, I think is hilarious and, like, just unbelievably poised for, like, an 18-year-old. Like, she's so just, like, politically active and just keyed in. She's just amazing. And then Zendaya, like those are my top two.
Oh, she's awesome. Yeah, this is great. Yeah,
so, I am so obsessed with Zendaya.
Zendaya. I think it's Zendaya. I used to say Zendaya too, but I think it's Zendaya.
I think you might be right. It's Zendaya.
Yeah, either way.
Well, here, how obsessed are we actually? If I can't even say.
Yeah, I know.
I really love her. She's
amazing. But so I think either one of those two ladies.
I like her on paper.
I like her written name. Yeah, exactly.
No, she's so fantastic.
All right, Manson. And what? Down the line, or maybe tomorrow, what's the dream project that you're like, dude, if they let me write the next, I don't know, Obi-Wan Kenobi Star Wars or Lando, because I don't know, maybe it'll be on Lando. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, that's a good question. Like, there are, I kind of would love to do like a superhero movie, kind of like how Deadpool was rated R comedy, but a superhero movie. Like, I would love to do something like that. I think that's a really exciting avenue for me. And then there's also, I don't know if I should talk about this, but I heard a story on NPR about this woman who was like the biggest madam in New Orleans in like the 30s or something like that, and that blew me away. I was
go
like
chase
the,
it, man. Do
yeah,
it.
Like ooh, I'm chasing the shit out of that. Like, I really would love to tell that story. And like, but it'd be like a dramedy, but like, you know, there's a lot of comedy in.
Oh yeah, imagine the things that must happen in Madam's house.
Right, there's the natural comedy of like, you know, these are people who are probably high society who are coming to do this maybe seen as untoward thing, and then there's also like the element of basically like a female business owner before that was really cool. You know what I mean? Yeah. So there's a lot I think to play with there. So hopefully I get to do that.
NPR that's like, is such a wealth of things to mine.
I mean,
for stories.
Yeah,
oh
it's
my gosh.
So many, and they like, and they're all, the stories are all over
inspired
the board.
Inspired by real things that are happening.
Right,
like,
right.
It doesn't get any more.
I agree. Doesn't get juicier.
We're circling the question by Zias B. Liu.
Oh, Zias, yeah, we always love you. I'm glad you're in, brother.
May
Let's
you ask Chuck if he could write or direct a live-action superhero movie, what would it be? I could see Static Shock or a Blade reboot. My question based on that was going to be, did you have an IP in mind for an R-rated superhero movie?
I don't yet. I had a meeting with somebody the other day who brought up one that
I definitely can't talk
about. But I'm trying to think of like all the in the superhero world. See, I feel like there was a way to do Wolverine more comedically.
Yeah,
I think that would have been an interesting sort of perspective. And then also, I'm trying to think of all the superheroes that I was a big fan of when I was a kid. Like Christopher, not Christopher Nolan. I'm sorry, Tim Burton's Batmans back in the day. Those were dark.
Those were like my favorite.
But they were funny.
The conduit to the Christopher Nolan Batman we have now from the camp. There was enough camp, but there was enough serious, and there was enough dark.
Yeah, but that was the first superhero movie that really did dark. Like, most of them before were just all campy. Mm-hmm. And so I think that ushered in this new era.
Although the best superhero movie ever was Superman by Richard Donner, my former boss. That was the best superhero of all
Shout
time.
Shout out to the old boss.
But,
yeah.
So when you're not busy on Dear White People, and you're not busy pitching, and you're not busy promoting Stepsisters, when you have Netflix at home, what are you watching?
Oh, dude, don't get me started. Like, it is a...
No, people want to know. This is what we talk about every single week. We talk about what people should be watching, what they shouldn't be watching. I would love to know what it is that you're watching when you have your own shows on there.
It is a treasure trove. Like, I just keep finding shit on there that I'm like, why is everyone not talking about this? Like, I mean, I know everybody talks about Black Mirror. That's the one I've discovered the most recently.
I still haven't seen it.
Love it.
And Ashley Channing, this is her last episode.
She's no longer with the show.
Felt everybody just bitch slap me simultaneously. Yeah. I got felt it happen with their faces. So everybody relax.
Knew you.
I'll get on it.
It's worth it because it deals with a lot of issues of technology and sort of how we can sort of go be through the looking glass before we know it. And something that seems like a really great technological idea can fall into the wrong hands or be used for nefarious means. And it's like scary as shit, but also really interesting and thought provoking. Like, that's probably one of my favorites. And then I just finished watching Easy. Have you guys seen that?
I've seen the thumbnail. I haven't clicked on it yet.
It's amazing. It's like an anthology series, so it follows just, it's about relationships.
Is that the one with the kids on the bike? No. That's just a different thumbnail?
No, that's isn't that Stranger Things?
Dope. I'm even thinking of Dope.
Probably thinking of Stranger Things. Yeah, that might be what that is.
Well, hey guys, officially this is Ashley Chaney's last episode on this panel.
I have seen Stranger Things, everybody. Okay, different show.
You know what? Yeah. Next week, we'll cover Easy. I'll watch it. We'll cover it.
Oh, okay. Do yourself a favor. The first episode, I watched the very first episode, and I was like, oh my God, I don't like that character. That's me. And I was like, I need to be a little bit better in my relationship, because I was like, I'm seeing too much of myself in this. And then, but it follows sort of different characters every story, and then or different every episode. And then sometimes they'll come back in a later episode to people they had followed in an earlier episode, so you get a little update on two or three of the stories, and you never know what's going to come up next. But it's all really like... fascinating. There was, one of the ones I watched most recently that I loved was I can't remember the actress's name, but she was in that movie Patty Cakes.
Freaking love Patty Cakes. Okay, sorry, I just almost dropped
it. No, it was mine.
I dropped like seven of them.
But that's how excited I am about Patty Cakes. Did you love Patty Cakes?
I thought it was amazing.
If you guys haven't seen Patty Cakes, unfortunately, I don't think it's on Netflix.
It's not yet.
Is it?
Maybe it's on iTunes.
Well, you know what? It's okay, because you know what is on there is Paddington, and Steve Kaufman, KAUFMAN, loves Paddington so much that he went to the theaters to watch Paddington 2.
Did you?
Oh, I love Paddington 2.
I heard it's on Rotten Tomatoes. I heard it's really funny.
Not only that, but I went to the TCL Chinese.
Wow.
For like a 10 p.m. screening, and I got the whole theater to myself.
Well, shocking. I mean, it's Paddington 2. What do you think? It was going to be sold out?
No, but I...
lines around the block.
Usually there's like another person for the 10 p.m. Chinese theater screening.
He reserved the theater for himself.
I had the entire theater to myself to watch Paddington 2. And it was delightful.
You guys are kicking me off the panel because I'm amazed
that Paddington 2 is the best reviewed movie on Rotten Tomatoes. Therefore, I need to watch Paddington on Netflix.
Yeah. Paddington is on Netflix. That was my pick last week.
Yeah, you got to catch up. You got to, like, who doesn't love a little fuzzy bear? Like, it's the cutest thing ever, right?
I think everyone in their mind is oversimplifying Paddington. It's actually wonderful. You should all just go watch it.
Okay.
Well, I'm so shocked right now. I would have never thought.
I mean, Ted was also Paddington. A talking bear, so, you know, there's that. Well, I'll give you the talking bear, but I caught
you
off.
Watch it before you
I hope Paddington curses as much as Ted did, because he just... That would really make it,
He says bugger, four times.
Bugger? Okay. That's kind of a curse in England, yeah.
You were saying the actress from Patty Cakes was in a movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She was in an episode of Easy, and is she like? I don't want to give anything away, but like Judy Greer plays her mom.
I love Judy Greer.
Judy Greer is always amazing. Mm-hmm. And she gets caught fooling around with her boyfriend, and then they make her go to church, and then she sort of starts like getting overly churchy to like get back at them. And then
no more.
Yeah.
I'll figure it out. But the actress that plays Patty Cakes,
is the main character in this episode.
So good.
She's so funny. She has so much depth. She's a really good actor. I wish I could think of her name right now, but I can't.
We love you though, just as much as Zendaya.
Exactly. Yeah.
We have just a few minutes left, and
that was quick.
Yeah, it is quick.
Man.
What you guys need to realize, it's a true treat to have Chuck in here, because I've known this guy for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And
over a decade.
So we met when we were like 12.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
The thing about it is that it's not always these overnight success stories. It's not Timothée Chalamet, like at 17.
He's not an overnight success, guys. He's been working
but
for a long time.
Chuck has been at this for a very, very long time. Dude, I would love like know your piece of advice to like the audience, just even to yourself, to say like how you just had to just keep at it.
I mean, that's it. Just keep at it. And there were definitely some dark time. Whenever you're chasing a dream, whenever you're going after something that there's no clear roadmap to, you sort of have to be your own boss and like keep yourself to deadlines, make sure that you're turning out product. You just have to stay on top of yourself, and you have to pay the bills. So like you have to go, like Rick and I were assistants when we met. And so I was an assistant for 9 years at different production companies and television shows. And then I finally got my first writing gig. That was after 9 years of having slugged away.
So it's not,
production assistant?
Just a regular assistant.
I was a producer's assistant at a production company. So like I was on a desk, and then, I was a PA on Everybody Hates Chris for 2 seasons, and then a PA on Entourage, and then the showrunner's assistant on Entourage. So
once you got to the showrunner's role, because I'm like, how do you develop story chops if you're not around those rooms? Like, how do you?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I would ask, hey, can I? If I'm not busy, can I come in the room and just sit down and watch? And so they would let me do that. And you know, whenever I wasn't busy, I would do it. And if I had other spare time there at work, I'd be sitting at my computer working on my scripts, and I would crank out scripts at work as much as possible. And so it was, tenacity and a lot of hard work, not like getting discouraged, because you hear so many fucking no's before you get a yes. So it's not letting those no's deter you or steer you off your course. And it's also, I've been saying this in interviews, like people say like it's all who you know. And I think people misinterpret that as meaning like it's who your parents can give you connections to or like whatever but no, it's people that you meet that you make a good impression on, that you show that you're a hard worker and that you have talent. And eventually they're going to, because like, you know, when we were assistants, we started seeing like our all of our friends around us who were assistants would get promoted into positions where they could then help you. They could put you on writer's lists for their bosses to meet. They could like, because I got almost, I'd say half of my assistant jobs I got from people calling me up and saying, hey, Chuck, somebody, they're looking for some an assistant over here.
Yeah,
and
true.
So, and just because we had met, we had gone to drinks, we had, you know, maintained a relationship, and they wanted to look out for me when they had the opportunity to. So that was amazing. And also,
yeah, like Chuck and I went to we went to Hooters and had drinks.
We did because Hooters was
really good wings.
They amazing wings.
At the time, they had really amazing wings.
Yeah, yeah.
Not so much anymore.
Well, and you find all the cheap places around LA hanging out with assistants. Like you find all the dopest little places. Like, do you remember St. Nick's Bar?
Yeah.
Like they had this was where I think Baco Mercat or something like that.
Yeah,
it's like some fancy
Mercat.
Yeah, so it used to be this cool dive bar that where the drinks were like, you know, the beers were like $1.52
and not quite that cheap, but they gave you a big pour. If you wanted a mixed drink and it was like literally three quarters of it, you'd be like hammered.
And then there were certain, I can say this because they're out of business now. There were certain booths where you would sit and they'd be like, I was having drinks with a friend. He was like, hey, check this out. Lift up the seat of the bench and there's
snacks.
No, beers. Just cases of beers, and he'd just pull one out and have a beer from under the seat. That's where I was like, I have to draw the line there. I was a big like bring my flask to places. Like that was my jam.
That's just
frugality.
Like, you know,
it's basically it's kind of finding a loophole in the system. You be discreet, resourceful.
No man, see when I used to go, I just used to go with the girls. I'd be like, you buy me drink, you know, and then
did that work? You should be so offended by you right now.
Did you have to keep up that voice the entire time?
Yeah. That's hard.
So,
but you find a very specific set of the community who's like, yes, I will buy it. I've been waiting for this stereotype to come approach me. And I never do.
And that's like, how Rick became a host at AfterBuzz.
That's when I was just like, I'll take the Voom champagne.
There you go. You're like, that's the one I know. Yeah.
No, dude, literally for me, it is a true treat to see your success story, because I've been friends with you for so long, knowing that it wasn't something that was overnight, knowing that, you know, in this industry we have our peers and jealousy, envy, like all these types of things. Like, the depression can kick in because you're like, why is it this person and not me?
Sometimes it can't kick off.
But it's awesome to see, like I said, just to see your success. I mean, it's an inspiration. It should be an inspiration for you guys to know that. He said 9 years before he really started seeing success. So
I think that's what actually anybody that's been successful in Hollywood, everybody says, oh, they were an overnight success. That is just not true. You just haven't seen all the time that it's taken up to that. All you see is like, they came out of nowhere. They didn't. They've been like banging on the back door for 9 years.
Yeah.
Like, and that's my strategy is I'm just going to stay until y'all kick me out.
That was my strategy. I was like, I am not letting L.A. beat me. Yeah. I will fucking stay here until they drag me out of here clawing on the 101. Like, I am staying, damn it. You're not getting rid of me.
Sorry. I have a lot of stand-up comedy friends who have tried. Whoever said this initially should really get on it. But what it is it takes about 2 years to get funny and about 10 years to actually get noticed that you're funny.
Yeah.
But they tell people that up top where it's like, expect that. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you're shooting, you'll grow to a point where you'll shoot straight fire on stage every night, all night, every night. It'll take another 10 years from that point to actually get noticed for being able to do it.
Mm-hmm. That's, like, I've heard that too.
And if you're not ready for that journey, then don't do it.
Right.
Start at the mailroom somewhere where you're in your hometown, and then you'll work your way up.
I guess. I think that's the thing. Like, if you love it, if it's something that you really love, and you're, my joke has always been like, I majored in TV, radio, and film. I was like, I'm not trained for anything else. So like, this has to work, or I don't know what the fuck I'm gonna do with my life. So
you can't not do it.
You can't not do it. So yeah, with no safety net, it's actually a good way to go forward. Like, which I know
it's
is a dangerous message.
Under there.
Just fire just and fire. Alligators, like alligators breathing fire. Yeah. It's very dangerous down there.
Well, that was another thing.
Exciting.
All right, guys, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Rick Hong. You can find me on all social media at Rick Hong, R-I-C-K-H-O-N-G. And
thanks for chatting, everybody. If you want to talk with me some more, find me online at Ashley on Camera.
You guys can find me on Twitter almost exclusively. I'm at Steve Kaufman. That is K-A-U-F-M-A-N-N. I'm also covering the Royal Rumble at 10 p.m. Pacific, so I'll be probably in this very room. Quick picks from me. I have not seen A Futile and Stupid Gesture, but I will. And West Wing. Get on the West Wing, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, West Wing. Thank you guys so much for watching. I'm Amy Cassandra Martinez. You can find me on all social media at Amy Cassandra MTZ.
And Chuck, thank you for being here. Where can everybody find you?
Yay, thank
you very much. Instagram, I don't tweet very. Instagram, I'm starting to do more. That's at Zero Chucks. Twitter is at Chuck Off, where I don't tweet very often. But now I will, now that I know that I have more characters. And, yes.
Yeah.
And thank you guys so much for having me. Absolutely. I really appreciate it. It was great talking to y'all.
Good talking
to you. All right, guys, that's it for this week. We'll see you next week.
Go Eagles.
All right. All right. Bye.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Stepsisters!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.